Coming up on Garden Talk.
It's really cheap and simple, too, to just build whatever frame and size you want. You know, get your extractor, choose your lights, and then boom. I use what's available, and one of the first things available when I first started growing again in Colombia was 5-gallon paint buckets, but like not used with paint. So there's no toxicities or anything. You just go buy a paint bucket. It's like $3 or something. And I was like, oh, it's so much better than going to the gardening store. They're like $10 or something here. If you're all still a little bit early in that flower and you're seeing a lot of stretch on the main stretchers, if you need to, do a little bit of LST, just a little bit to slow her down. And if you have to, take those two top four whatever suckers, just, you know, slow them down just a little bit with a little bit of low stress training. This is a way to be able to have your own medicine, produce it for yourself on a consistent basis in an organic way where you actually know what is inside your medicine and you get to choose it.
What's up, everybody? If you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It, and you're tuned into the Garden Talk podcast. This is episode number 80. In this episode, I interview Dakota from Home Grow TV. He is a YouTuber with over 21,000 subscribers and has a lot of experience doing closet growing. In this episode, he talks about growing in small spaces, such as closets. Thanks to all of you who support this podcast through Patreon. If you'd like to support, you can do so by going to patreon.com/MrGrowIt. Before we get into it, I want to acknowledge that one of my goals for this podcast is to bring zero cost for information about gardening, all plants, to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. AC Infinity is sponsoring this episode. The Grow 10 kits are incredible. You get their Ion Board LED grow light, their Grow 10, which is currently the thickest on the market, their ventilation system, clip-on fan, and the controller 69 to control it all. You also get their fabric pots, a trellis net, plant ties, and trimmers. Definitely a good price for all that you get in the kit. I'll have a link in the description section below so you can learn more about these Grow 10 kits, and you can use discount code MrGrowIt if you're buying off their website, acinfinity.com. That discount code actually works for all AC Infinity items. Or discount code MrGrowIt15 if you're buying off Amazon. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk podcast. Today I am joined with Dakota from Home Grow TV. How you doing today?
Dude, fantastic. What an honor to be on the show. Mr. Grow It, my bro. Can I call you Chris now that, you know, we get to hang out virtually like this for the first time?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, no, thanks again, bro, for having me on.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to be on here. And, you know, the topic we're going to talk about today is something that excites me because it hasn't really been talked about on my podcast yet, which is closet growing. But really, we're going to be talking about like growing in small spaces as well, right? So it's not just closet growing, but some people don't have a closet. They're just growing in a small space. We'll get all into that because there's really some things that you can do differently than you would do in a larger grow space. So kind of narrowing it down specifically to those small grow spaces, closet growing, I think is going to be valuable to the audience. But first, can you do an introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into gardening.
Yes, definitely, definitely. So my name is Dakota, originally from Edmonton, Alberta in Canada. Right now I'm living here in near Medellin, Colombia, and that's a long story. We'll get there. But no, originally Canadian at heart, absolutely, you know, love it. I think a lot of people notice I'm Canadian when they start hearing me talking. My boats still come out quite a bit. And my journey into growing and finding this medicinal plant is actually quite interesting. And it's really cool to be able to come on here today and be able to share it because, you know, the format that I get to share on YouTube and stuff, we don't really go into my backstory so often. And getting to do a few interviews myself, it's not getting into the backstory of Home Grow TV and how we got here today. So it's really cool to be able to dive into that. And what makes it so different is the fact of like kind of like the age I got into it at and how I ended up finding it. It was actually my, what I call my stepdad, you know, my mother's boyfriend at the time. And I was 16, 17. And I had started to have my first kind of relationship with, you know, the medicinal side of it and starting to see it. I suffered a lot at a young age of migraines. I used to be like hardcore once a month. And this was like, it'd be either a full one day or if not a 2-3 day migraine. And my mom didn't know at the beginning, but I ended up finding this, you know, to be a solution. And I came back from a trip and I was 16 years old and I go into the basement and my stepdad shows me this little wooden closet and it was built out of a wooden frame. And he said, this system right here what I'm about to show you, and I had no idea what's inside. I'm like, talk about a buildup of what's to come. And he's just like, tell me the rules first. Like, what I'm about to show you, this is a way to be able to have your own medicine and produce it for yourself on a consistent basis in an organic way where you actually know what is inside your medicine and you get to choose it. And I was like, okay, what is in this box, you know? And so it was with a little screw drill, and he undrills it and it opens up, and I just see like a row of six little plants, and they had these little white pistils coming out. And I had never seen the plant in that form. I just had always seen it in its final cured form. You know, I wasn't this was my first entrance into seeing this format. So my entry into the growing world was actually through family and showing me step by step. And it was books like, you know, The Grow Bible or Jorge Cervantes, you know, course. I got, you know, taken through those steps by steps, but in person, and given that book and given that course. And like the first thing ever in my hands, and that was the first like year and a half, was that little closet grow. And it was a three little step formula. And it was really like a 2x6 is what it was. And this was, you know, your flower, your veg in your mum room, and your clone room up top. And it was like little T5 bulbs for the clones. And I didn't know any of these things. And he was just showing me the system. And he was like, the first thing also, he's like, that same day, here's your journal. You write down everything you do to these beautiful plants and everything that goes into them. And you write down any signs from here on out. And this is now, you know, like immediately just took to such a beautiful hobby to see them change from the first day I seen them, then go in the next day for a week later. Immediately I was hooked. I took it very seriously, and I seen the, you know, the impacts of the way you treat, you know, this plant and what comes out of it after. Oh my God, that first harvest was the most insane thing, you know, that I've ever seen still to date. I'll remember it clear as day. That was kind of the grow, getting into my first kind of experience with closet grows. And that from there, that same technique went into grow slightly bigger spaces, but it was always still building our own wood frames, white reflective poly. You know, grow tents wasn't something I heard of yet or seen. LEDs was something you only seen in High Times magazine. HPS was the light we were using. And then for everything veg was just T5s, those nice little thin bulbs that we just put on a nice little panel. And it was a lot of, do-it-yourself building, you know, working with wood and kind of doing it. But that was getting that respect and understanding for creating your own environment in a small space. And that's why I thought the topic today was so good to dive more into the small space closet grow. Compared to, I do have, you know, experience with bigger tents and bigger grows then, but that's what started it all. And I still to date now always have, you know, these small 2x4s or closet style grows, because I just found the importance, number one, of controlling your environment, and then the ease of doing it in a smaller space. Learning there was gave me great, you know, kind of a foundation to go to a, you know, from there, I think we were building enough for 20 plants and into something a little bit bigger. And that was, you know, a totally different space. But the what you can do in just a closet size built, you know, by yourself at home and help self-sustaining, you know, perpetual harvest, that absolutely blew my mind.
It's pretty cool to hear your story about how you started and starting with a small space and kind of working your way up into bigger space. So you have experience in both types of environments, right? That's really cool to hear. I have to ask, how did the whole YouTube thing come about, right? So you're real known for your YouTube channel called Homegrow TV. Mm-hmm. I'll definitely have a link to it down in the YouTube description section below. You currently have 21,000 subscribers on Crazy. Your channel. And I must say, your video production is insane. I mean, you're up there with the best of the best as far as video production, bringing everybody up to the next level as far as video production. How did that all come about?
So yeah, that's a great question that follows up through. That was my, again, getting into and finding what it was like to grow, finding how easy it was to be self-sustaining with your own medicinal, you know, plants at home. That eventually ended up coming to a full stop when I get into, again, I was so young when I got into it. I continued that till about, you know, 18, 19 years old, worked a few construction jobs. And then I actually was blessed enough to have a friend who also worked construction, and he got into the world of affiliate marketing, online marketing, internet marketing. And this was back in like 2011 and 12 when I decided at 19 years old, I'm going to get into affiliate marketing. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with authors like Tim Ferriss, the 4-Hour Work Week, and these different people in the self-development world. That was one of the first books I read, was the 4-Hour Work Week. And I learned about geo-arbitrage, where you're getting paid in U.S. dollars, Canadian dollars, and then spending that in somewhere else. So at 19 years old, I went to Thailand, and I was barely making any money online, but it was going to be more than it was worth in Canada. So I took the risk and I went with my buddy, and it ended up really snowballing and turning into more income than I could have thought of at that time, more freedom. That's what got me to Colombia as well. In 2013, we did 9 months in Thailand, and then I came out to Colombia for just 3 months. That was my plan. And that was 2013. Now we are in, what, 2022. I'm still here, absolutely loving it, you know, traveling out of here often, but this is my home base here in Colombia. And since then, in 2016, I made a transition into filmmaking. And it was a lot in the advertising, filming, and the marketing world. So as an affiliate marketer, the best way to sell a lot of my products at 19 was to create a video, you know, drive them. And this is like back when Facebook marketing was like just the right side banner ad with a photo. And then you click on it and it would go to like email. And then video wasn't even a thing yet on Facebook. And so when it did become a thing, that was like, I got to learn this. I bought Final Cut Pro in 2013 as well. And I would just slowly do my marketing videos. And I found that on Sundays, which was my free day, I was editing videos to like 6 a.m. of like me traveling and all these like just random things, just trying to learn the skill of editing. And I sat down with myself in 2016. And that's like, that's the blessed thing why I continue to love this plan so much, because it was because of this plan. And on a creative session, just sitting there thinking and analyzing my life, I was like, what would life look like if that's all you did? If all you did was create film? So in 2016, I made a big risk and just started working in the video world, learning the skill set, putting in the time. What is editing? What are the basics of camera? And then, oh my goodness, a pretty much pandemic, the whole COVID thing started in 2020. I had been working in film now just for a little bit. I could no longer travel to go to the clients that I needed to go to and the events the way I used to work. And so I created Homegrow TV. And I was like, dang, man, what if I did the same amount of effort, everything I was putting into my clients' work, their commercial work, that stuff, and we just did it with this beautiful thing that I used to do, and I had stopped growing for 8+ years, traveling, client work, you know, and I didn't know in Colombia you could even grow 20 plants legally. Everyone here by residence, by household, is legally allowed to grow 20 medicinal plants in their house with no said license. So when I found that out, and this was, again, just around right before COVID-19, I was like, I'm going to create the channel. And just slowly, again, that transition from working with client work and marketing to doing Homegrow TV, which really I would say 6 to 8 months ago is I'm like, I just want to go full time. I just want to hang out with these ladies, film them, see them go from seed to harvest, document that part. So that's kind of where the filming and the production value comes from the Homegrow TV side, and the storytelling from that past experience I had creating marketing videos and filmmaking in that world.
That's awesome. Wow. So coming up on 10 years video editing total since you said you started in 2013. So no wonder why you're so good at it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I really do love it.
So transitioning over to growing, you talked a little bit about what your grow style is, right? You mentioned indoors. Do you also do outdoor growing as well? Also, are you organic? Are you mineral-based or often called synthetic? And what medium are you in? Are you soil,
great question,
cocoa, hydroponic systems?
So being here in Colombia, it's crazy to say this, but I'm 100% indoor right now. Here in Colombia, we have 365 all year round. It's 12-12 light. It's perfect conditions for outdoor. And some of the biggest outdoor grows in the world are based out of here. And that's why I see these major companies now coming down from Canada, you know, from all around the world, really licensing land and moving in that direction. So do we do it yet? No. And that's mostly just because of the property I live on. I cannot wait. That's my goal within the next year, to get to a place where I can have 10 outside beauties and then 10 inside. Again, limited to 20 without going to get a license. So 100% indoor right now, but cannot wait to get outdoor. The medium we use is, I started here in Colombia, and this is trial and error. Here in Colombia, dude, it's so much different than back when I was in Canada, what's available, right? Like I can't go get what I originally learned with. So it was a learning curve the first year here, and I have a great grow bro that you see a lot on the channel. His name's Mr. Q. He runs a company here out of Colombia. He has been growing like a year more than that here in Colombia. So he had his company down, you know, his feet down, and he's like, dude, go to Coco. And it's like, it cost me $10 for like a big bulto, like a big coffee or like a big potato sack, 40 kilograms, $10 for that. And it cost me $10 for a big bag of castings, earthworm castings, another 40 kilos, just huge. And so I follow his formula, what he taught me, and I play between just Coco 50-50 with the castings. And it's not the same quality of castings, again, that I would be used to in Canada that you might find in the States. It's not like just pure, like, oh, this is just, you know, worm poop. Like, you can tell it's a little bit of earth still, but there's a lot of great minerals in there. So I usually play between a 70 cocoa to 30, we call hummus, castings, or 50-50, playing anywhere between those kind of ratios. And then for nutrients, what's really cool at Homegrow TV, we're always just testing new things. So we've done a 6-month cycle with Mills Nutrients. You know, we did a year cycle with an organic line nutrients that is actually my Grow Bros, nutrient line. And it just to see and for me to learn again, to get my feet wet and see, okay, that was the difference between this. Now we're running cutting edge, split with Kronk. So we're testing at different times, and we're never just running through like, okay, just one grow test. We're going to run everything for 6 months. Let's run it for a while. Let's see how it works. And then from there, we'll decide, do we move on and test more nutrients, or are we going to stick with these ones? And I think we're almost getting to the point where I'm just like, okay, I've tried enough for like, let's just hang low for like a year, 2 years, and just run this stuff and start to dial it in more now with the plants and see how they're reacting.
Gotcha. Okay. And you mentioned that you started in a small grow space. Really, your closet is framed in, I guess, right? You started in a framed area. There's a lot of people in a similar situation to you where they want to actually create a framed grow space that's, you know, around closet size, or it could be even smaller than that. Talk to us in detail about how you went about framing it. Even getting into the details on like what size wood you used. I think you used either, would you use the panda film, a mylar, so on and so forth.
Great, great question, dude. I love that you're bringing me back to that time. And I really, really hope my stepdad watches this at some point, because what great times those were. And I'd say like the best way for people listening to this, or maybe watching this right now, and thinking about building your first one at home, and like you wanted to see someone do it, I would go search out Jorge Cervantes and like that original grow course. He shows you how to frame out a room. And the way we would do it is we would look at the space. So the first one ever, okay, I know I have about this much, and we framed it about 2 by 6. And again, in Canada, it's very typical in most garages in your household. You're going to have power tools. If not, someone's parents or friends, someone's going to have power tools. If not, you would go rent them. When I first moved out, that's what we'd go to, the Home Depot. We'd rent what we needed. And we'd just do a day cutting, measure everything out, and very simple framework. You know, I'm really just talking like just, you know, 2x4s cut to the size, you know, drilled together with your power drill. Depending on how big we went, then obviously we'd have side braces and brace it a few more. But Jorge Cervantes does it great, bro. And that old school grainy film, I think it's on YouTube as well. And he's up there and they're just, you know, they're hanging everything. They're getting it up. And what we would use, I don't know the name, but I knew it as black and white poly. And I don't know if it was made for construction or if it was a gardening thing. But I'm pretty sure I would get it at the gardening store back then. And that wasn't something I would get at Home Depot. I can't remember specifically, but it was black on one side, white on the other. And then what I liked about, and I still like about the idea of building your own size grow room, you can tailor it to your own size, you know. And so when I first did my grow on my own outside, you know, without my stepdad taking me step by step, we went a bit bigger and we just custom built it to whatever our basement was, knowing, okay, we just spaced out, okay, 2 plants. We had a track and a 600 watt HPS going back and forth at the times. So we're like, okay, we'll put maybe 2 or 3 20 in here. Okay, perfect. And then so we just, you know, framed it out custom with that. And then the poly with a little stapler, stapling it up, you seal it, you know, you cut your hole where your ventilation is going to be. Very, it's exactly what the tents are today. And that's why it's crazy too, to see how easy the kits are. You got the holes in the bottom and you choose where you want to open up the flaps. We were doing the same thing before I even knew that existed. And I'm just like, wow, bro, like I'm just so fortunate that I was taught that way at the beginning and not just throw it in a closet without, you know, sealing in some kind of way, having an extractor, you know, bringing the fresh air in, not knowing that, and just planting beans. If that was my experience getting into the game, I think, I don't even know if Homegrow TV would be around now. It was really nice to learn the basics. So, you know, it's cool to even see people use a closet. They might not even seal it with black and white sometimes, but they do have an extractor going out. They got things coming in. They know no light's going into that room maybe. So there's ways to do it without sealing it, but it's really cheap and simple too to just build whatever frame and size you want, you know, get your extractor, choose your lights, and then boom.
For the polyfilm, I think it's also called panda film. I'm not sure if it's a brand panda or what, but yeah. That stuff, you know, for anyone listening in that's looking to purchase that stuff, there's different sizes of thickness. And some are so thin that you can actually hold it up to the light and you can see the light right through it. So you just got to be careful that you're looking at the thickness. I think the standard thickness is 5 mil. I think the Happy Hydro actually has the thickest on the market, 7 mil. So if you're really looking for a real thick one, you know, product placement here, Happy Hydro, shout out to you guys. I actually have some of it. That's what I used for my closet. 7 mil thick on that stuff. So it's solid. Now, what about lighting? What did you use for lighting back then? And taking a look back, what do you recommend now for lighting in a space like that? Since back then, the lighting was a lot different than it is today.
Yeah, dude. HPS was our main go-to for flower back in the day. And I love those T5s. Like, I would even bring them back now. Just those small fluorescent little T5 balls were so cheap. And we would get custom and build panels with, like, 10 of them on there. You know, they would barely, you know, use up anything. And I remember even doing a full grow from seed to harvest with just those to see. And I was, like, blown away with, like, oh, my God, it actually produced nugs as well. I thought just HPS was going to do that. But no, HPS was really nice back in the day, especially in Canada in the winter, bro. It gets really, really cold. So it was nice to have that heat at certain times, definitely during the winter. I can't – in the summer as well, we were in a basement, so it was nice and cool. And, the great results. But now, like, especially with where I live now and being in Colombia, and even if I was still in Canada – LED, I just really big fan of LED because of the heat. The efficiency is so nice. There's like something for everyone's grow style. So it's like some people are really into the bars. Some people love the panels, you know, and it's just really cool to see where it's come. And, you know, we're always just testing as well different things here on the channel on Home Grow TV. And it's just, we found some really, you know, amazing, you know, just amazing results with, I remember the first time I tried a 200 watt LED. And I was like, oh, it's just, you know, and in a 2x4s, which is a great example, and keeping the environment small, and it was just 200 watts. The first time I ever tried one, I was like, I wasn't expecting, you know, what I see on Instagram, these 700 watts, 1,000 watt LEDs, crazy nugs. Dude, it was unbelievable. I was like, oh, my God. It just blew away my expectations. You know, if you just have it dialed in nice and have everything turned in nice, and with those small tents, I find it's easy to dial in the perfect settings.
Yeah, that's all you really need for a wattage these days. It, you know, can be very, very low. I mean, for a 2x2 space, a lot of people put 100 watts of LED in there.
Right.
You know, a 2x4 space, 200 watts. Now you can go above and beyond that for sure, but then you could potentially run into heat issues, you know, with all that energy consumption being drawn, the heat coming from the diode, being in that small space, that can be difficult.
Yeah.
Let's get into air exchange, air circulation. First, what's your ventilation system? You talked a little bit about an extractor fan. Is there a particular brand fan you're using to exhaust the air? Are you using carbon filter too, so on and so forth?
So yeah, ventilation, I think that's a perfect question for the timing that I'm just recently going through right now, because I think it was 2 or 3 episodes ago on the channel, we released something on powdery mildew. It's the first time that's ever happened to me. And I got hit hard on like 2 of my tents because in Canada, I always took it for granted. We had a much drier climate. And I remember not having to fight with 80, 90% humidities like I have here. So I was like, oh, one of my fans broke. And this was a, I won't mention the name, but it wasn't a brand. It was like the cheapest one I could find on Amazon, an extractor. And it broke down. I didn't have a replacement. So I connected one tent to the other tent to the 2x4 so they would extract both and then go out. So I'm bringing powdery mildew from one into the other, which I didn't know. And then it's all on the channel, on the episode. I learned so much. And so I definitely respect more now. And it's something we all know, but I didn't know the consequences until I was dealing with powdery mildew. Now I know it has to be on point. And the main one that I'm absolutely loving is the AC Infinity because of the monitoring. Like, to get to see the humidity that's in there, getting to adjust the probe and not having like an external little one, I'm absolutely loving. And now having the Bluetooth ones, I don't have the Wi-Fi, but I have the new Bluetooth and their advanced setup. And it's so cool to be able to see it on my phone, have alerts set up and everything. So for me, that's my go-to now, and I don't think I'll invest in anything else that's not going to be at least at that level to be able to see now what's going on, monitor for my phone, monitor if I'm at an event, just in case something does, you know, totally have an error, stop working, which, you know, in all the time I've been growing, that's the first time a fan ever failed like that, but it was enough to totally mess up, you know, 2 beautiful tents. And dude, AC Infinity, I'm absolutely loving them right now. And please, please, everyone listening to this or watching this, don't make the same mistake I do or I did. It won't happen again on the channel, but take your extraction, your ventilation seriously. inside the rooms. I've always had Clip fans, but I've found a lot of the Clip fans I've worked with in the past or I've used have never had the power I wanted to. But I'm finding the new AC Infinity ones, which I also have, like they have the oscillating ones, which I'm absolutely loving, and the other ones. Also getting to set the power and control the power for my phone and everything. It's just giving me a whole new realm of control and like kind of freedom. So I'm excited to see how that reflects the grows. I'm doing my first tests and harvest with those setups right now. But yeah, if I don't, on the other tents where I don't have the nice oscillating ACs, I'll run, you know, a nice big from the home center, like the Home Depot center, big fan up in the corner, one down below. And if I need to, maybe another one just to make sure everything's kind of somewhat dancing in the room, not break dancing and getting nuts, but just slightly kind of just moving back and forth and say no to powdery mildew.
Yeah, the air circulation is so undervalued by so many people. And a lot of people don't have their fans set up the way they should, so the air flows as it should. And a lot of people have a real dense canopy, so there's hot spots and humid spots. And but yeah, air circulation in order for it to get the CO2 that it needs. Now, AC Infinity, they've certainly done so much in order to make things a lot easier for indoor growing, right? One thing AC Infinity doesn't have, though, which maybe they'll have in the future, who knows, is heating and cooling. So some people will run heaters in their environment or some type of air conditioning, whether it be the standalone ones or the central AC in the house. What do you do for heating and cooling?
Dude, yeah. And that question too, I can't wait till they do it, because the main question, and me as a consumer of AC Infinity, I remember the first time seeing it and making my order on getting my first inline fan or extractor fan. And I was like, is it AC though? Is it producing AC out? Is it making cold air? And I'm like going on the website. I'm like, where's the AC in this thing? I would totally didn't know at the beginning, but I can't wait for that to come out. When I lived in the city of Medellin, which right now I'm only about a half hour outside, and Colombia is the second most biodiverse country in the world. Some say it's the first, some say it's the third. Between Brazil, you got Peru here, but it's up there. Meaning, if I drive a half hour this way, it can get a lot hotter and sometimes more humid. If I go half hour that way, it can get colder, and I'm like, I need a jacket on. With just a half hour, just the elevation, it's in the mountains here. So just being in the city where I was. A few months ago, 8 months ago, I think is back when I lived out there, it would get way too hot in my room. So I needed an AC. It would get like 32, which I'm not good at Fahrenheit, too hot. You know, it was a few degrees too hot of my optimal, where I wanted to be. And so I would have to run it at night. And even running it at night, I had to keep my lights low, because if not, it was just going to be too warm unless I had AC. Moving a half hour out to where I live now, and this was part of the decision of why I moved here. I was like, okay, if I'm going to take it serious, it's going to be a big investment. You know, AC all year with the amount of test rooms that I want to do and stuff, that's going to be pricey. If we go a half hour over there, here at night, it gets cooler. It's cooler here in general. It can be a little bit more humid, but right now it's perfect. Like the hottest I'll get is 25 degrees, and then I turn them off in the day, and it sits at 22. So my range is now like 3 degrees on any tent pretty much from day to night, being able to crank to 100 on the lights that I do want to. So I'm really blessed being able to choose, like, okay, let's just move a little bit over here and kind of control it that way. So if I didn't, though, yeah, I would be using AC. And a lot of people here in Colombia use AC, which has its own advantages, you know, as far as keeping the humidity down, working in some of those areas. I wish, you know, maybe I had a curing room with AC in it. That would be really cool. Goals, you know, maybe one day we'll get there. Just my cure room has AC. That'd be amazing. But no, for now, keeping the energy bill as low as possible. No heaters, no AC.
One thing I just want to add to that would be for air conditioning. That's a concern for a lot of people, especially in small spaces, you know, closets. You're not going to be able to really fit a standalone, one of those portable AC units in your closet. They're just too big. I mean, you probably could, but you wouldn't have much space left for a plant. Of course, it depends on the size of your closet. If you had a huge walk-in closet, then you could probably fit in a right. portable AC. But one thing to keep in mind is that they consume so much energy. The standalone portable ones, so much energy. I had one of those for a while and I was using it and my energy bill just went through the roof. Now the window ACs are going to be a little bit more efficient, but by far the central ACs in the house, and that's what I use now, is just the central AC in my house. I just lower it down. I'll freeze a little bit if needed. But as long as my plants are happy, that is most forgiving on the energy bill for sure. So I just figured I'd add that in. And then for heating, one thing I just want to speak about is a lot of people use those portable heaters. and I have one of those tower heaters. I use that all the time. Same thing with your AC, is it might not fit in that grow space comfortably, but having your equipment outside of the grow space in your lung room, like the room that your closet is in, for example, if you're controlling the air in that room, and then once you have your exhaust fan on, you're bringing that air in, well, you're bringing in the ideal air, right? The temperature and humidity that that's been conditioned in your lung room is coming into your grow room. So just figured I'd mention those few things. Now, how about humidifier and dehumidifier? A lot of people adjusting the relative humidity in order to get into that optimal range for plant growth. Are you using a humidifier or dehumidifier at all?
Are you feeling overwhelmed by the constant stream of dire climate news? Turn that concern into action. Tune in to the Climate Confident podcast every Wednesday morning when I bring you good news and real solutions from the front lines of climate action. Whether you're in business, tech, or just passionate about sustainability, the Climate Confident podcast is your weekly dose of optimism and inspiration. Subscribe to Climate Confident on your favorite podcast platform and start your Wednesday with hope and actionable insights.
Yeah, great points. And especially being in those in a small tent, closet grow, 2x4, or anything bigger than that, it's, you know, talking about that last issue that I did have with the powdery mildew, now that'll never happen again. And so talking about the 2x4s, for example, again, they're sometimes my favorite just because I can control the environment so easily. And like, I have small dehumidifiers in every single one of them. Just small, you know, the little portable ones, it doesn't hold that much liquid. So it would be nice to have a huge one in the main room. But it's just nice to see, okay, cool, we're getting to this point. Put a little portable one inside, and it's actually been keeping it in the perfect range. Seeing like 58 to like 66 if it gets crazy rainy and it's like really, really humid, which again, here I'm used to seeing 80, it could be, you know, 90 sometimes. So dehumidifier all the way. The next big investment will be getting two of those big ones. I'm going to start with one. Let's see the difference on the electricity bill, but I'm going to get one of the big ones because curing has just, and drying has been probably the biggest challenge of growing in a very humid spot, because even you keep it good in the room, now curing it, it's just a whole different thing. So if I can control the entire room where all the grow tents are and keep that at a certain range, that's kind of where I want to go and just have that draining into a bucket, much lower maintenance instead of going in the tents every day, taking out the little dehumidifier water and getting rid of that. So yeah, definitely, dehumidifiers here. I wish I had the problem to have to use humidifiers like you have, right? That's what you have?
Yeah, I'm the complete opposite of you. I've never had to run a dehumidifier because my natural humidity is like 30% now. Looking at it right now, it's exactly at 30% right now. I'm looking at my monitor. And wintertime, it gets even crazier. It's like 19%, 18%. So it's like super dry here, which increases transpiration and plant growth. It could actually be a negative thing in some cases. So I actually have a humidifier. So I add in humidity. Now, one thing I will say about humidifiers is those will, you know, you can shove one of those in a small grow space, either a small grow space or a closet space. LaVolt is the brand that I've been using now, and it's way better than anything else I've ever used. This one is top fill, so you can actually just take off the top, load up the water without to, like some of the other tanks, you have to like take off the whole thing, flip it upside down, unscrew it, then pour it in. It's like you don't have to do any of that.
I've seen
it
on
like
one of your episodes. That was that was really cool, dude.
It makes it easier. I know it's like seems like a small feature to some people, but it's like it's it's just the convenience factor. It's great. Also, it's connected to your smartphone as well, so you get notifications when it's out or when it needs to be cleaned, which is really cool. So I love that one. And the tank, I think, is like a gallon and a half. So it's larger than a lot of the other tanks on the market. So I can't recommend that brand enough. I did have a leaking issue with one of them, but I think I just cleaned it, and then now it doesn't leak anymore. So I don't know what happened there, but full disclosure.
Thing looks solid. And that's kind of like the difference between the dehumidifier And the small one, the disadvantage taking it out every day, 2 days, if you forget about it, it's just going to turn off, stop taking out the humidity, compared to if I had a bigger one, I'm running the hose, it's going into the bucket. There's some things it really is making the it's worth making the jump for and investing. Like, we think about LEDs as being just the main thing, or okay, then we'll think about our tent. But man, yeah, it's like, it's not fun, but sometimes you're going to have to drop, you know, depending on where you live and your situation, on something like that. It isn't the most exciting, but man, is it going to make, it's going to save so many headaches and just save you, you know, just better butts.
Yeah, I completely agree. And that's why most of the episode so far, just about the entire episode, has been on the space and the actual equipment that goes in the space. I do want to transition over now to actual growing the plants in that small space. And I think I want to start with the container size. Right, you're in a small space. What size containers did you run in your small closet grow? And I guess what size would you recommend?
So yeah, I started I remember back in Canada, it was cool. I haven't seen these or used these since, but this was like back when it was like, remember just the plastic bags? They were disposable bags, kind of like the grow bags material we have now, reusable. These were like just plastic, and we were using 1 gallon sea of green. But nowadays, especially having a plant limit, and that's often the conversation, you know, depending on where you're growing, you know, or what the medicinal plant limit is on where you are here, it's 20, right? So I never want to go above that. And I usually want to stay a few, you know, below, just to, in case I want to cut a clone or just have room to be able to play. So the size I often do now, you know, and I always still like to, you know that big roots, big fruit. So as big as we can go. In the smallest of testing size, 3 gallon, just to see certain strains, how they're going to produce in a 3 gallon. And that's in a 2x4 small setup. I'll put either 2 or 3 in there. And if I put three gallons in, then I'm going to leave veg them out, you know, not as long, you know, 4 weeks maybe, and then kick them over. Whereas if I have just 2, I could veg them out for maybe 8, you know, 6 if we wanted to just get into it and then have more room in there. So I've done both, and we have several episodes on the channel of showing both what it's like to have 3, what it's like to have 2 using 3 gallons. But some of the other favorite ones, and a lot of people actually make fun of me too of this one, but in a nice way, I also kind of laugh at it. I use what's available, and one of the first things available when I first started growing again in Colombia was 5 gallon paint buckets. So like, you know, but like, not used with paint. So there's no toxicities or anything. You just go buy a paint bucket. It's like $3 or something. And I was like, oh, it's so much better than going to the gardening store. They're like $10 or something here. It's like this luxurious one. And so I just got a bunch of these 5 gallons, drilled holes in them. And it was nice because they were a little bit taller. And if I wanted to do sea green, I could fit a bit more, you know, into that size. And then the biggest is 11 gallons. And that's when, like, you know, in a 5x5, I can have 5 of these 11 gallons and veg them out for 8 weeks, make them big. You know, if we want to keep it to 20 plants, can't do a sea green of 40. Let's do 5 big ones, you know, in 4 separate rooms, you know. So that's what I've also tested. That's on the biggest end, is 12 gallons. None of it fabric yet, but right now we're testing 2 tents, a 2x4 and a 4x4 with all fabric pots. And that's from Basement Auto Flowers, homie, that has his fabric pots with the option to train your plants, which, you know, we'll talk about later. So I'm, again, and there's the differences there. I like the non-fabric because I started with that when I first got back into Colombia, and I just found if it's not the right quality, you're going to get leaking everywhere. It dries out quicker. You just have to be ready for the difference between growing in a fabric pot. And I found sometimes if you're away from the house an extra day, or if you might miss a feed, having the non-fabric just kept the moisture a little bit longer. And it was just something, I just got used to the timing of when they were going to water and everything. So now we're going to be testing, fabrics. I think we got 3 gallons and 5 gallons. I'm not sure. I got to double check. It might just be 5 gallons, but we're testing those right now as well.
Okay. Yeah, there are pros, so many pros and cons to running smaller containers versus larger containers. I mean, if you're running 1 gallon containers in your small grow tent or grow space or closet, then you have a whole bunch of plants to water. If the plant is big, it might dry out the medium faster, so you have to water more often. Versus if you're running a larger container, say 3 gallons or 5 gallons, maybe you have to water less frequently. You know what I mean? So that's just one of many pros and cons to it. We could sit here for the next 30 minutes and talk about container size, but I don't really want to do that. But you did mention training, and I want to get deeper into that. Yeah. Next, plant training, staying in a small space, staying in a closet. Some people need to train their plants to keep them small so they'll stay within that space. What do you typically do for plants training when you're in a small space or closet?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. It totally depends, again, on the space. And talking about our small spaces first, a 2x4, to make the most out of our 2x4, there's so many, the way I see it, and I've gone to the extreme of being the over-trainer, right? Like, I've done it, and I've over-trained the lady, and it's like week 10 veg, and she's like just short, and there's like 100 things. And I've gone the opposite end of like, let's just don't touch anything and let her go through. And I found, now I find you're in a balance and you understand the plants a little bit more, especially when you know the strain. I think it's always fun to, the first time growing out a strain, if you can just let it grow naturally to see, that's great. If you don't have the time, you want to get right to training, though, I think there's a few basic things talking about a small grow that we should do. The most basic and the first thing would definitely be topping, you know, just to not have one branch, and if I have an extra 2 weeks that I want to veg for, I love to top. And that way, at least I'm dealing with four tops. I've had some episodes where it looks like we have just 10 amazing colas, and that's from one single topping that we did, depending on the strain, right? Some, I like to, let's say, you know, if you want to delay it a little bit, and let's say it's all on timing, I like to kick the next garden over when that one's halfway done, right? To always kind of keep things, you always got a consistent harvest coming at a certain time. So I'm like, okay, well, I want to keep vegging these an extra 2 weeks. Let's train them a little bit more. Let's do a little bit of LST now, right? We always pretty much do the topping, but right now I'm kind of living in that flexible area in my 2x4s of just how quick do I want to flip this over into flower? Okay, I know I have about 4 weeks. All right, let's take our time. Definitely do one topping, and then from there, LST her to just make sure she's not going to stretch too close to the light. You know, that's, I don't know, in a small space, this happens to a lot of us. If it's going to happen at some point in your life, it's already happened, or it's going to happen in the future where you over-veg a plant, or a plant's going to overstretch, and in a small space, you always have to keep in mind, if you don't know that genetic or what she acts like, you know, treat her like she's probably going to stretch a lot, play it on the safe end, and don't veg her out too long. Train her so she's, you know, you got yourself some good playroom just in case she stretches a foot and you're still, you know, a good at least 6 inches away from the light.
If someone does make that mistake of over vegging their plants, or maybe they think they veg a good amount of time, but then they flip over to the flowering like cycle and they get that 2-3 weeks of stretch and then they're really outgrowing that space, what are some things that they should do?
Perfect. Yeah, that's a great question. That just happened here recently. I'm the type of guy that always has his fan and carbon filter in the room up top. And so the first time this happened, I was like, oh my God, like really soon these are going to get too close. So first step, let's get the fan outside the room, the carbon filter out the room, get the lights as high as you can. So get everything out of the room, like as far as ventilation that you can on the outside, your extractor, that kind of stuff, extract from the outside, pull out, you know, push it outside. That's the first thing. And let's say you've done that, or let's say you don't have the option to, and now no matter what, you're going to hit it. Depending on where you are, you know, you can do a really late topping. You know, there's a lot of people who are very, don't stress, you're going into flower, you've already started flower, don't do that. If you have to, you have to. And if you, like, you're already week one flower, you're seeing what's going on, take her off, because if not, you're going to run into her problem. She's going to be touching the light, you're going to be crying, she's stressing out. So that's one thing, if you're early enough to be able to clip her out. I had another one I wanted to share there. I've had to take plants out in foliage. She was just going to get too big. She was already too late in the flower to start taking buds off. So I had to start over again, you know, on that strain. And that was really unfortunate. So yeah, I would say take out your ventilation what you can, raise the heights as much as you can, and then early. Oh, and that was the last thing. Sorry. So again, if you're all still a little bit early in that flower and you're seeing a lot of stretch on the main stretchers, if you need to, do a little bit of LST, just a little bit to slow her down. You know, like if she's going to, you see her going right up. And if you have to, take those two top four, whatever suckers, just, you know, slow them down just a little bit with a little bit of low stress training. And then that hopefully should even out. The rest of them will start to come up and you'll have more of an even kind of canopy.
I go as far as even super cropping. You know, when I get those branches that just come up and just actually, it's a form of high stress strain technically, is have that thing flop over and then the other branches will kind of catch up. That's a good call out. But yeah, I've had a handful of people over the years that have sent me pictures and like, I'm running out of space, and they just have that one branch coming up and it's like super close to the light. And I tell them, I'm like, you may want to sacrifice that branch, and they don't even think about it. You know, you definitely can, you already mentioned this, you definitely can top that, remove that branch, and that's actually going to help the other branches that are lower, right? Because if you have this one branch coming up and it's too close to the light, you could stretch out to the plant so much, and I've done this before, to where it starts throwing out nanners. You know, it's just, it's too much light stress. It starts throwing out nanners. So cutting that branch off, well, then maybe the rest of the branches are going to now grow just fine because you've sacrificed that one branch. So a lot of people don't think of that.
You bring up a great point. Yeah, and a lot of the photos we take on Homegrow TV or for Instagram, sometimes we take it at a point in the plant's life where she's not ready for harvest, but she looks the best for photo. So we'll cut her, and then we'll take the pictures, and then we leave the plant maybe to flower at max on one strand. We push her another 2 weeks. And interestingly enough, now that you say that, now I remember going back and we looked at it after, and it's like we never took anything off. We're like, oh my God, look, everything is beautiful. Even though 2 weeks ago, a week ago, we took off, you know, our beautiful, our catalog one, the rest now are like, wow, have all matured. So yeah, I think, yeah, you don't have to be worried if you got to take off a big one now that you bring that up. I've done it for photography, and yeah, she will still mature nice.
Yeah, absolutely. How about watering? Is there anything that you do in particular when you're watering your plants, you know, specific to closet growing?
Specific to closet growing, not so much. If I had to relate it to, I do keep my reservoirs obviously a little bit smaller. And let's talk reservoirs, I think, you know, per tent, because as a home grower, whether you have a small closet grow, whether you have a 4x4, 5x5, you know, a 10x5, whatever it is, everyone's going to have a different way of feeding it. So what we do at Homegrow TV with our water, at least, is we do a reservoir. We dechlorinate 24 hours before at least. And a small closet grow, depending on the plants, I don't want to leave my water out in the reservoir for, you know, for too long. So I like to just monitor it. And I use those same 5-gallon buckets, leave it out for 24 hours before. Usually 10% of what the pot is what I'm giving it, you know, for water. And I'm moving now almost to like almost a daily, where I'm almost testing this with a few small gardens and just watering them kind of daily, smaller amounts. So no big difference. But what I will say, and something exciting coming up, I don't know if it's going to be great or if it's going to be just totally not relevant to plants, but there's an alkaline, or it's just, it doesn't have to be alkaline, but there's a water filter that I used to use just as a person, not for growing. And this is basically allows me to control the pH that comes out of the machine all the way from, you know, I can choose 11 to pH 2.5. So I think there's going to be some exciting stuff in the future for Homegrow TV and experimenting stuff with water. Everything from extracts to, you know, to watering our plants and seeing the difference is really something going on, cloning, stuff like that. But no, as of right now, I'm very typical. Take out your water, 24 hours, dechlorinate, small little reservoir, and yeah, do that probably about twice a week.
All right, pretty straightforward stuff there. So we are coming up towards the end of the episode, and one of the questions I like to ask on most episodes is getting advice for beginners. So what advice do you have for those that are new to closet growing?
So yeah, no, great question. I think advice for new growers getting into small closet grows, maybe just small tent grows, 2x4, 2x2, whatever that may be, I would say definitely keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate it. And get started taking it one step at a time, meaning if you don't have everything in your budget right now to get the dehumidifier we may have talked about today, to get the humidifier that you may need, maybe you need to start off with, you know, not your most ideal light that you want to choose. Get your kit, get going, don't overcomplicate it. And I would also say as a side piece to that is follow, if you don't have a grow bro that's going to take you through this step by step, I would follow someone who has the results that you're looking to achieve, whether that's someone who has a grow journal, Seed to Harvest online, whether that's watching Mr. Growitz content, someone who's done it, proven the concept, and follow that step by step. Don't lose yourself in the information of what nutrients, what genetics, what light. Get going, have fun with it. And then, because after your first two grows, you know, then you can start making decisions, your own choices, and kind of play it from there. But yeah, I would just say keep it simple and start having fun growing in a small, nice little closet grow.
Definitely keep it simple. I mean, I know people who grow in a closet, they just have a light in there and that's it. They don't even have any ventilation. They don't even have air circulation. They just keep the closet door open and they have a fan blowing towards the closet door and the plants still grow.
Exactly.
So you can certainly get away with it. You just might not get the most optimal, dense buds, you know, that you're looking for, but you'll still get a harvest off of it. So I like your advice there when you talk about keeping it simple, because we did spend a lot of time here talking about environment and the equipment in order to automate the environment, because it's very important, but you can certainly get away with not having a lot of those things.
Exactly.
So wrapping things up, how can the listeners find you and what do you have upcoming in the future?
Awesome, dude. Well, you can find us on Homegrow TV on YouTube, just Homegrow TV. Also on Instagram, same thing, Homegrow TV. And I think the future is where it gets really exciting because, yeah, right now we're known for a lot of Seed to Harvest videos. We do lives. Me and you are going live right after this here on Homegrow TV's channel. We do interviews, not nearly as much as you, brother. You're a master at that, and we learned so much from watching your stuff. It's, you know, we've done a few breeders here and there, but where is Homegrow TV going is, I think, to that documentary short film, showing Colombia, showing the breeders, kind of like that Strain Hunters, what we got to see back in 2013, I think, is when that kind of came out, that Strain Hunters area, that documentary style of the story, the growers, the people, where did our land races really come from? Getting to meet these kind of families who have been doing it, you know, from generations to generations here, and that's all they know. That's what gets me really fired up. And also those tours. So getting to see, being here in Colombia, I really feel like in 5 years, you know, what Colombia will be known for will be totally different than what they have been known for over the last 20 years because of the movement and what's happening here with this beautiful medicinal plant. It's unbelievable, the attention it's getting. So to be here and to not be telling that story of some major, you know, players down here, I think it would just be silly. So that's what you can look forward to in the future with Homegrow TV. Some beautiful short stories, some amazing tours of some beautiful facilities and some families that have been living it for generation to generation.
That's really exciting. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what you put out on your channel in the future. And I'll definitely have a link to your channel down in the YouTube description section below. If you are on YouTube, click that link and go to his channel. Give him a subscription. If you're on one of the podcast platforms, just search for him. You'll find him, Homegrow TV on YouTube. And he'll pop right up there for you.
Beautiful, brother.
If you enjoyed this episode, click that thumbs up button. Also, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Every single weekend, I'm releasing one of these new Garden Talk podcast episodes, and I would love for you to tune into future episodes. Dakota, this was awesome, man. Thanks for coming on. This was a really good conversation about closet growing, and I definitely think it's going to be valuable to a lot of people tuning into this episode.
Awesome, dude. Thank you so much. Again, it's such an honor to be here. Gives me goosebumps to see this happening right now and to see you through the screen. Hopefully we get to meet one day in person at an event somewhere in the States, who knows where. But much love, brother, and thank you for having me on.
Thanks again. All right, peace out, everyone. See you in the next episode.
Peace.